te Vasudevaya.
Om namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om namo Bhagavate
Vasudevaya.
Chapter 29, text 30. For 30, 31, do we go on or do we just... It's up to me. Okay, we'll just do something. Nai tatraya dambikaya. Nastikaya sataya cha. Asurashur abhaktaya. Durvinitaya diyatam. Not. Etat. This. Tvaya. By you. Dambikaya. To a hypocrite. Nastikaya. To an atheist. Shataya. To a cheat. Cha. And. Asushusho, to one who does not listen with faith. Abhaktaya, to a non-devotee. Durvinitaya, to one who is not humbly submissive. Diyatam should be given. Translation. You should not share this instruction with anyone who is hypocritical, atheistic, or dishonest, or with anyone who will not listen faithfully, who is not a devotee, or who is simply not humble. Om agna timarandasya gnanjana salakaya chakshulin militam jena tasmai sri gurave namaha sri chaitanya manovistam stapitam jena buddhale Svayabhupa kadamayam dadati sva padandikam vancha kopatrubhishta kripa sindhu vyevacha patitanam pavanebhyo vaishnavebhyo namo namaha. Jai Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Sri Advaita Gadadhar Srivastri Gaura Bhakta Vinda. Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare, Hare Krishna. So, Maharaj has asked me to speak this morning, his last day here, so I have to follow his instructions. That's part of it, says here, being humble, so I have to accept, even though I'd much rather hear him, and you would also probably much rather hear from him, but today, he's asked me to speak, so it's very nice to be back here again. ISKCON Melbourne. It was just about 4 years ago, I guess, that I was here at that time with my wife, and it was a big festival at that time. I think there was an anniversary, installation anniversary for the Lordship Radha Vallabha. So, not sure what year that was. I know it was an anniversary of their installation. So coming here, of course, is very... always very exciting for me. I've been, this is, Prabhupada would say, I've gone to, arrived at Surfer's Paradise on the Gold Coast for starts, and then I went to Brisbane, and then in Canberra, so now I'm here. And Prabhupada said when he went to Atlanta, he said, and this temple is the best. It's a very wonderful temple here. And that's not to say the others are the least, but this temple is the best. And of course I can say that because I have a special attachment here, because as some of you might know and some of you might read in the book, Transcendental Adventure, I had a transcendental adventure, part of my coming here very first time, not to this temple, but to this city, to Melbourne, was with Srila Prabhupada. And that was long time ago, 1973, in February, I think, of 1973. So that makes it about 38 years ago. And it was myself and Bali Mardan, at that time Bali Mardan Swami, who was one of the first devotees to set foot here in Australia, along with Upendra. Bali and I, we carried Radha Vallabha from India to this city. And that was a wonderful adventure, and it's one that Prabhupada took note of as we were doing it. It was a trip that went, I'm not sure whether it was from Calcutta or Delhi, but it stopped in Bangkok, and then we came here to Melbourne. And we literally carried their lordships. Bali carried, I'm not sure who carried who at that time. I have this idea that I carried Srimati Radharani, so I'll leave it that way. But we just held them. And back in those days, you could do things like that. You could bring all kinds of things onto the airplane, and it was a lot less difficult than it is now, especially here in Australia, one of the most difficult places to bring anything into this country. But we took them onto the airplane, and the plane wasn't full, so they were sitting in the seats. They each had their own seat. And Radharani and Krishna, they had seats and they had their seat belts on, and they sat there. And when we, of course, we had to get off the plane and we had to change planes. So when we got off the planes, we had to again pick up the deities and take them into the airport and at the gate area in the transit lounge and sit them down. We sat them on the seats next to us, and it was very interesting, because when we got off of the plane, and Prabhupada, he would, as he always did, he would sit at the window seat, and I would sit next to him. But in this case, the deity was sitting next to him, so he had Radha and Krishna next to him, and then we were sitting. So when we got off the plane and carried the deities again into the airport, and then put them down, and we were sitting waiting for the next flight, and Prabhupada looked at me and he said, he said, there's so many austerities, he said, one performs in Krishna consciousness. There's so many different things you can do, he said, for Krishna. He said, and this is an austerity, he said, which was interesting, because of all the things I did, that was the least austere thing I ever did. It was actually, anyone would have been very, very happy to carry their lordship. So, but he said that it was an austerity. He said, what you're doing, he said, is an austerity for Krishna. And he said, Krishna's pleased, he said, by what you're doing. And when he said that, I really became, it was a moment, one of those moments, and I just thought Prabhupada was pleased. And of course, Prabhupada saw that Krishna was pleased. And I thought, how easy it is, I thought, to do service, to perform austerity in Krishna consciousness and to please Krishna by such a simple activity, what I considered to be a simple activity. But Prabhupada was so happy that he was bringing Radha Krishna to this place, to Australia. He said a similar thing when he went to Caracas, Venezuela. It was his one and only trip to Caracas, Venezuela. That was in 1975. And there they had Gornitai, Shishi Gornitai. And it was an amazing trip, actually. Prabhupada went from temple to temple, and he kept seeing, everywhere he went, he kept seeing Shishi Gornitai. In every class, he would talk about how merciful was Lord Chaitanya and Lord Nityananda. So when he saw them there, he was saying, he said, Lord Chaitanya, he said, he's traveled very far to be here with you. And it was how Prabhupada saw everything and how Prabhupada did everything. Everything was very personal. And of course, it was Prabhupada that had traveled so far, and Prabhupada that had brought Lord Chaitanya and Lord Nityananda to these places, and Prabhupada that brought Radha Krishna, very directly he brought Radha Krishna here to this place in Australia so many years ago. And it was when I came here 4 years ago, I had a little realization as well, how difficult it was to come here to Australia. And Prabhupada never spoke about difficulties. There was no such thing as difficulty in Prabhupada's language, in Krishna consciousness and devotional service. He'd say there are no difficulties, he would say. There are no stumbling blocks. Once when a devotee wrote him a letter and said, Prabhupada, I have so many stumbling blocks in my Krishna consciousness. And Prabhupada said, there are no stumbling blocks. He said, there's just service. He said, and if there are any stumbling blocks, he said, with my foot, he said, with one kick, he said, I'll kick away all of your stumbling blocks. He said, but you have to follow my direction. He said, and then there'll be no difficulty. So this was how Prabhupada always saw things. It wasn't difficulties. There was service. And when one actually performs devotional service, you get more service. You get enthusiasm for more service, and you get more service. It's not that there's some end point. We're looking for an end, and then we can relax. Prabhupada's method was just the opposite. There was no question of relaxing. He didn't relax. And when we were with him, even though we were so young, when I came here with him first time, I was 22 years old. So I should have been very young and energetic, but all the traveling, after months and months of traveling with Prabhupada, I started taking my afternoon naps, you know. It was something I had never done as a devotee, growing up in New Vrindavan. No one took naps within the society. But all of a sudden, traveling with Prabhupada and keeping his schedule, it was wearing us youngsters down. But Prabhupada, he was the opposite. He just became more enlivened all the time. And somehow he was completely transcendental. So he would come to this place, which was it wasn't on the way to anywhere. You know, like so many places Prabhupada would travel to. You know, if he went from India, then you could go into Europe and stop in London and stay for a week after an 8-hour flight, and then you could go on to the States and travel around. But when you come to Australia, it was literally down under. It's just to Australia. And when you leave, you go back to where you came from, because there's nowhere else around here. There's nowhere to go. You've like reached the end of the world. But he came here several times to bring Krishna consciousness to all of you here and to everyone in this country. With so much endeavor. But looking back again, I see he was just very happy to do it. And at that time, of course, Bali brought him, and Madhavisa Prabhu was here, and he was always scheming. He was a great schemer to somehow or other bring Prabhupada to Australia. This is intelligence. He was very intelligent. He knew to develop this place, just get Prabhupada to come. Because wherever Prabhupada came, he purified that place, and it became a Tirtha, wherever Prabhupada went. And Prabhupada knew that. You know, otherwise, he traveled around the world like 14 times. In 10 years, 14 times going around the world. And it wasn't an easy thing. But for Srila Prabhupada, he made everything seem easy, somehow or other. When I was with him, at times I would think, you couldn't see him doing things, you know. He would do the morning program, and of course, while we slept, he was translating. So he was up 2 o'clock in the morning doing translating work. And in certain places, sometimes I would wake up. I was a light sleeper, so I could hear his voice. And just like in these verses here, in this verse, in the purport, previous purport, it mentions Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur. And sometimes in Prabhupada's purports, you'll hear him mention his name, you'll hear him mention Sridhar Swami, and the other acharyas. Because Prabhupada, when he did his translating work, he had two books that he would keep in front of him. One of them, it was the Black Bhagavatam. So this is how we identified things. It was a Black Bhagavatam because it had a black cover. And it was the entire Srimad Bhagavatam. And as all it was every verse in Sanskrit of Srimad Bhagavatam. All 12 cantos were there, just the Sanskrit verses. Nothing else was there. There was no translations, no purports. It was the Bhagavatam. And then there was one other book that Prajumna would bring, and that there was one book for each canto. And that was called the Green Bhagavatam, because it was a green cover. And the green Bhagavatam, the black one was just about this size. It would look just like this. But the green one was very big, like the original Krishna book size, you know, or even bigger. It was almost like an A4 size sheet of paper. And they were all about so thick. And that was the Bhagavatam with the verses and then translations. And it had commentaries by some of the previous acharyas. So every morning when Prabhupada would get up, early in the morning, somewhere between 1 and 2 o'clock in the morning, after taking rest around 10, he would sit behind his desk, like you see his rooms here, such a beautiful room, and he just had his desk lamp, and he would turn on. Otherwise it was always dark. In the evening it was dark in Prabhupada's room. He would turn on the desk lamp, and he would open up the two Bhagavatams. So, and that's what he would spend the next few hours. This is how he was doing Srimad Bhagavatam every day, every morning. Sometimes he would do for several hours. He would be in a energized. He would want to get, I think it was in Hawaii, 76, may have been seventh canto or so, but he worked several hours all through the day because he was in a special place, Hawaii, where it was very peaceful, very wonderful, and he just said nothing else. He said, we'll just translate. But normally he would do a few hours, and he would sit there. He had that Grundig tape recorder. And back then there was none of these fancy gadgets were there. When I was with him, when I first became his servant, like when I came here, there was no cassette, not even a cassette tape recorder, right? We had this big Ur. It was an Ur tape recorder. It was a reel-to-reel tape recorder. And I don't know, must have weighed at least, you know, 6-7 kilos or something. My shoulder still hurts carrying it for a few years, this thing over your shoulder. And the microphone was this big, you know, and you would go on the morning walks and hold it. So Prabhupada had his dictaphone machine, this Ur. So we would take that everywhere we went as well, because in each temple you had to bring it, because most of the places you went, none of these facilities were there, not even to record his classes. So unless you were in a very organized, set-up temple like New Dwarka, New York Temple, and maybe some of the temples here, you know, I was responsible for recording the classes. And then you would send off these reels of tape, and hopefully where you were, you could get the other reels of tape. So with Prabhupada, he just had these, they were very small reels in this Ur tape recorder. And Prabhupada was very expert in using all this equipment as it was there. So this tape recorder had a little button on it, and with the microphone. So it would have a play, record, and a rewind. So you just go back and forth to those three places and then push the record. So you could hear him in early in the morning sometimes. His voice was very, very deep. Especially early in the morning, there's kind of a special voice that's there. So Prabhupada's voice was very deep early in the morning. And sometimes I would wake up, you know, my fortune, and I would just hear his voice as Prabhupada was doing this most amazing activity, this most transcendental activity. And then he would say something, and then you could hear a button, and then he would listen to it. He would listen to what he had just said, not all the time, but sometimes he would listen. And then sometimes he would go back over it, and he would say something a little different. And this way, each day, this is how he was doing Srimad Bhagavatam. This is how he did Chaitanya Charitamrita while everyone was sleeping. All the devotees were sleeping very soundly. And he never called me at these times. Very rarely he would call, once or twice before 5 in the morning. But A few times he did, and it was during, if there was some disturbance in his Hare Krishna. If there was a disturbance in his ability to translate, that was the only time he would call to say, and he would ring his bell, and I would hear that bell, you know, I was like tuned to the bell. So he'd ring the bell, and once it was in Hawaii, and it was early, it was maybe 2 o'clock, 1:30, 2 o'clock in the morning, and he rang the bell, so I went in and I offered obeisances, and of course I was sleeping, I had been sleeping, and I just got up. And when I got up, I saw two things. I saw Prabhupada sitting behind the desk with this little grin, childlike smile on his face. And I saw this big pile of tape on the desk from the tape recorder. This time, like it was, you know, the brown magnetic tape. And it was just like this pile just sitting there all tangled and in this big mess. And he just looked at me and he smiled and he said, "I don't know," he said, "but something has happened." And I looked and I said, "Yes." He didn't take responsibility for it. He didn't say, "Look what I did." He just said, "Something has happened." And he said, "Can you fix it?" And I said, "Yes, I think so." Which I was actually, you know, I have OCD, you know, I'm a kind of obsessive compulsive and very neat. When I was younger, we used to have those, what were they, 8-track tape things, big. And when they would mess up, I used to tape them, and all through the house, I would undo it, you know, and tape it up, you know, put it back. So I got the tape, and that's what I did. I just walked around his room for like 20 minutes, and I just laid the whole tape out. I had to untangle all the different things and all the folds, and this was Prabhupada's work, you know, this was his translation. So I went around, and then I got the reel of tape, and I stuck my pencil in between the thing, just like I was training, right? And I just started twisting and walking, and Prabhupada just sat there and just watched me, you know, as I was doing this. And after 15 minutes or so, or 20 minutes, I was finished. I had it all back on this little reel, and I put it back in, and I put it onto the other side, and turned it on, and it worked, you know. And he looked at me. He said, "Very good." He said, "Oh, good. Go take rest." He would always say, "Go take rest." That was always, "Take rest," he would say. So then I went and took rest. Of course, it was rest meant 10 feet away, right on the other side of the wall. So you would just, again, hear Prabhupada, you know, doing this. Then the other time, there's only one other time, and it was in Krishna Balaram Mandir, where I was recently. We were there for Kartik, Krishna Balaram Mandir, such wonderful, wonderful temple there. And Prabhupada, at this time, had his rooms there, which... This was in 1974, so they weren't quite finished. But it didn't matter. When Prabhupada's rooms were ready enough for him to stay in, that's where he would stay rather than anywhere else. He wanted to be in the temple and in his rooms. He didn't like being outside somewhere, you know, or life members' place or motels. He didn't like motels and hotels. He'd stay in a simple room in the temple anytime. So, he was in this big room, and he rang his bell. And again, I was in the servant quarters, which was right next door. So I came in and I offered obeisances. And his desk was in the one corner. Those of you who've been there know where Prabhupada's seat is, at Krishna Balaram. But he was sitting right in the center of the room. He was just sitting under the fan. And I offered obeisances, and I was a little confused because, you know, he was sitting on the floor. And I sat up, and he looked at me, and he said, "The mosquitoes have dethroned me." So he was sitting there. And because of it, he said, "I'm not able to do my translating work." And that was the only thing he would mention. It was always about his service. He never complained about things. It was always in relationship to his service. He would say, they've stopped me. He said, I can't do my translating work. He said, they're such a bother. So right then, I went out and I found a mosquito net, a big double-wide mosquito net. So I came back into the room, and that was the first day we set up a mosquito net around Prabhupada's desk at the temple there. So then every night, you had to be so fast. In Mayapur and Vrindavan, mosquitoes like every square, cubic meter, there would be 100 so many mosquitoes. So you had to be so fast, because just in the time it took to drop it, there would be mosquitoes inside of it, So like you had to go inside and usher them out one way or another. I had some, violent ways sometimes I would get rid of them, let's say, which I, Prabhupada gave me permission one time. It was in Mayapur, and it was the same thing, these mosquitoes. Prabhupada would say mosquito. Mosquito is cutting. He'd say mosquito would cut his forehead, or mosquito would cut him, in the back. So in Mayapur, the same things would happen. There was a benefit, I'll call it a side benefit from the mosquitoes, was that at nighttime, when you put the mosquito net around Prabhupada's bed, that was a good thing, because every night you would massage Prabhupada. You massage his legs, massage his feet, and sometimes his back. If he sat up, he would say, massage my back. So usually you would just sit on the floor and do this, or kneel on the floor and you would massage him. But because of the mosquito net, of course you couldn't do that. So it meant you had to climb into bed with Prabhupada. So that, of course, that was a whole other level of ecstatic activity, because now you're in bed with Prabhupada in the dark room with the mosquito net around you. So I was just young, so I always had this, like I was in a tent with Prabhupada camping out, So it was like extra special fun. That was the best part of the day, for at least for me as servant. The best part of the day was massaging Prabhupada at night, because no one ever would come into Prabhupada's room in the evening time, and you would never go into Prabhupada's bedroom. Most people, you never came in anyway, but during the day sometimes activity was there, but nighttime you were guaranteed no one was there. It was just Prabhupada and you. So this brought it even to more more intimate, being sitting in bed. I felt very happy and fortunate that I was able to do that. But the first time we went to Mayapur, which was just about a month before coming here, I was there in Mayapur, and I'm massaging his back. And this was my first time in Mayapur, and I never saw mosquitoes like this before. They were very visible. They were like big, And I'm massaging him, and they're inside there. So I'd be rubbing Prabhupada's back, and I'd go, and I'm going like this. And then I'm rubbing it, and there's one, and it's right on his shoulder, and I'm looking, and it's landed on his shoulder, so I'm rubbing it, and I went right on the Prabhupada's back. And then I brushed it, and Prabhupada said, that's okay. He said, they're attacking. And then he said it's described in Manusamhita. He said, if one is attacking, you can defend yourself. So Prabhupada quoted Shastra. So I felt very justified in my attack in doing it. But anyway, I took the responsibility for whatever was going to happen, because there were two things Prabhupada said he didn't like. Two things he said cut his heart. He said, well, right to the heart. So those two things were, one was mosquito, and the other one, anyone know what the other one is? It's one other thing.
Snoring?
Slamming doors. Yes. That was in Mayapur, when the Lotus building, which was just beautiful building, but there were windows on each side, and the doors were on each side, so devotees were always leaving doors open, and the breeze would come all of a sudden, and you'd hear four or five doors just bam. And Prabhupada would just, his bell would be ringing, you know, because of slamming doors, it would just jolt. He said it was very difficult. So yeah, they were the two things. Conversely, there were two things. He said he liked two places. He said Juhu and Hawaii. He said were his favorite places for two reasons. That was also two reasons. That's easy. Coconuts. Coconuts and mangoes. Prabhupada, Dab. Prabhupada loved Dab. So, what time do we go to? For after 8:30 we have questions. Right. Depends. Okay. So anyway, so we got back and of course back to Australia. And Prabhupada he so much he went for all of us, huh? I think we see in this verse, huh? You should not instruct, share this instructions with anyone. Of course, this is all of us, huh? Hypocritical, atheistic, dishonest, not listen faithfully, who is not a devotee, who is simply not humble. So, I don't know of anyone else, but I qualify for most or all of these things. But this was Prabhupada's mercy, huh? And this is what he would say. This is the compassion of the pure devotee, huh? The compassion of a Vaishnava, that he actually takes people with all of these qualities and somehow, in pure devotee, he can turn them around. And devotees would ask Prabhupada, how did this Sujata Sukriti, this causeless mercy, you know, does that mean that, you know, our last life, we had some Krishna consciousness, you know, how is it we're here? And of course, Prabhupada's response was, but I've created your Agyata Sukriti. Yeah? He said, I made your, you know, your Agyata Sukriti. So even with no qualification, Prabhupada gave us qualification just by his presence, just by his vision, vision of him, by hearing him, by seeing him, by taking his books. Now, all of these things, we all come from this. This is Kali Yuga. It's getting worse and worse. We all come from this spot. There's no qualification. Prabhupada's given us the qualification. We know that here. You all know the story here. Melbourne, when he came to this place, he initiated the two devotees. First and second initiation at the same time, because there was no one even to worship the deity. Prabhupada was very eager to install Radha Krishna. Prabhupada said, worshipping Radha Krishna, one has to be very careful. I talked about that trip in 75. Everywhere he was going, he saw Gornatai deities. And he was saying, Lord Chaitanya, he said, it's very merciful. He said, he's so kind. It was in Miami. He said, he's so kind. He said, he doesn't even accept any offense. He said, even if by accident you commit an offense, he said he doesn't accept, he ignores it. He said he's so merciful. He said, but Krishna, he said, when you worship Radha Krishna, he said, you have to be very careful, he said, not to make offense to Radha Krishna. He said, so you have Gurnatai, he said to them. He said, so maybe in the future, he said, you'll have Radha Krishna deities. He said, but then you must be very careful not to commit offense. He said, but even you don't get Radha Krishna deities. He said, that's okay. He said, Radha Krishna, they're here in Lord Chaitanya, Lord Nityananda. He said, so go on worshipping in that way. He said, he's so kind, he's so merciful. So when Prabhupada came here, the situation was there was no one was prepared. So he made Brahmins, he gave qualification immediately just so they could worship the lordships, the deities. And then what did he do? He prayed to them, to Radha Ballava, and he said, please, you teach these people. I'm leaving you in the hands of these people here. He said, somehow, he said, you have to teach them. I have to give them the intelligence.
He said maleches.
Maleches, yes. I didn't say that, did I? He said maleches. That was a word Prabhupada used for us very often. I got that tag a few times when I was with Prabhupada. One of the one of the worst, I would say worst, best, one of the longest times he chastised me was in Los Angeles. And it was in, I was in the servant quarters. And I kept, like I said, I was very, very neat, at least in my, I thought I was. And I just had a small room. It was like 8 foot by 10 foot. And we had put the kitchen, my servant's quarters, what was the bedroom, also was a kitchen. So everything was very simple when you traveled with Prabhupada, you know, because when you're traveling, everything has to be simple. You don't get to carry much with you, you know, you have a suitcase and that's it. So the servant's quarters consisted of the straw mat, which you sleep on, and a chadar, which is your blanket and your jacket and everything. That was it. So in the daytime, of course, that's all put away. And then there was a shelf. It was about this wide, almost a foot wide, and 2 meters long. And it had 2 cinder blocks holding it up. And that was the kitchen area. So under it were your spices and things, flour, spices. And on the floor was a 2-burner stove. It was a gas stove. And it just had 2 burners, metal stove, and that was down on the floor. So everything was right on the floor. It was just like being in India again. It was like being in Vrindavan. And, well, before they built all these places with Western-style apartments. So I was preparing Prabhupada's lunch one day. And the door was always open to the servants' quarters. There was a door there, but it didn't need to be there because somehow you just knew it should always be open. You never had your door closed. And Prabhupada, he had a whole flat there. So he had a sitting room, and then he had a nice large bedroom, and then there was another sitting room, and there was a long hallway that went past the sitting room, his bathroom, and it ended right at the servants' quarters. And Prabhupada during the day, anytime during the day, Prabhupada, he would just walk around and he would chant japa. You see pictures of Prabhupada. He would chant japa a lot like this with his arm behind his back holding. And he would have his beads out like that. And he would just walk about his room and chant. And he would walk out and he would go down the hallway. It was kind of like inspection, you know, and he would walk past the servant quarters and he would just look in and then he would walk back and around and he would go. And you had to do your service in this kind of an atmosphere with Prabhupada there all the time. So then the one time he walks by and he stops and he just looks at me and he starts screaming at me. And this was wasn't the first time I got chastised, but it was maybe the worst time I got to. It was just really loud. And he said, "You malecha." He started calling me a malecha about 10 times. He said, "You're such a malecha." He said, "Look what you're doing." He said, now, of course, he knew I was preparing his lunch. And he said, "Everything is so nice." So he complimented me in his screaming. He said, "Everything is so nice," he said, "and you have orange peel in the trash can." I don't even know how he saw it, but it was just this little can. It's like this high, and it's under the table. And Prabhupada saw everything, you know. So he said, "You're cooking for the deities," which I was cooking for him. And Prabhupada was my deity, my spiritual master. He was... When you're Prabhupada's personal servant, you're a pujari. You know, personal servant means you're pujari to your spiritual master, and he's your deity, but he talks. This deity, Krishna, also talks, Radha Krishna, but you have to listen very carefully. Prabhupada said you have to qualify yourself. He said if you qualify yourself, he said Krishna, he'll talk to you. And he said, and you can talk to him. He said he's so kind, he comes in the deity form, he said, and he can talk to you. He said, but you have to become qualified. But see, when you were with Prabhupada, you didn't have to be qualified. You just were there. And he would talk to you. Sometimes he would yell at you. And he just said, "You're such a malecha." He said, "Everything is so nice. You do everything so nice. Everything is so clean." He said, "And you have these orange peels in the basket." they were his orange peels. They weren't any, to me, they were edible. They actually were the very first thing I ate. My first Mahaprasadam from Prabhupada was an orange peel, because he would suck all the juice out of it and he would leave the little bit of, you know. And so first I ate that, you know, the cellulose stuff in there, and then I just looked at the peel and thought, Prabhupada held this too. And so I ate the orange peel. It wasn't very tasty, but it was Prabhupada's. It was Mahaprasadam, so that's what I ate. So now, these orange peels, they were in the trash can. So they were his orange peels. So of course, the first thing you think is you say, will Prabhupada do yours? I never said anything. I learned that early on. You never give Prabhupada a reason when he's yelling at you, because that increases the amount of yelling. it increases the duration, and it increases the volume as well if you give an excuse, because the whole point of you getting yelled at is to become humble. Like it says, this is for one who is not a devotee or is simply not humble. So the whole purpose of accepting a spiritual master is to learn how to become humble. Because we're not humble by nature. This is why we're here. We lack humility. So Prabhupada was always teaching us humility. Not always, but he would. Whenever he saw some pride, he could immediately, like sadhu cuts, he would cut your pride. So this is the business of a spiritual master. That's why it has to be a person, has to be there. You have to surrender. You have to bow down to a person. You have to accept authority from a person to become humble. So I learned when Prabhupada was yelling, it was to make me humble. So there was only so much humility that I could accept at any one time. So as soon as he yelled, that was enough. So I just would, and he said, why do you do, you know, that's what he would do. See, he would trick you, you know, he would say, why? That was an opening to give an answer. So my answer is, I'm a fool, you know. But that wasn't a good answer either, because then, well, why are you a fool? So you couldn't, that was Prabhupada. When he wanted to chastise you, you couldn't defeat anything he had to say. Whatever you said, he would just come right back at you. Prabhupada was never defensive in anything. He was always on the offense, you know, the offense. He would always attack. And if somebody asked him a question, a challenging question, he would just come right back at you. He wouldn't answer your question. He would bring it to another level. So he would just, you know, if you attacked, he just counterattacked. He didn't take a defensive role. You know, many examples we can talk about it another time. Just like with when a reporter would say, you know, all your devotees are sleeping on the floor, they're eating. We used to eat off the floor they used to just roll out, what was it called, wax paper, you know, just a cellophane, a hard cellophane. Just rip off these 12 inch squares, like the size of these tiles, and that's what we ate off of. And then they would plop the prasadam down on this piece of wax paper, you know. So by the time you were done, the wax paper was merging into the floor and falling apart. But, you know, this was going on in some of the temples. So, you know, people took note of these kind of things. So the reporter was saying, you're teaching this philosophy of austerity and everyone is so austere and they're sleeping, you know, 6 hours at night and they're getting up early in the morning and they're eating off of the floor and you're driving in a Rolls Royce because they had given him a Rolls Royce. So you would think, you know, if someone said that to you, and, you know, you would have to give all these reasons. And Prabhupada said, why Rolls Royce? He said, it should be a gold car. You know? So he didn't, you couldn't make him like, ooh, you know, how am I going to deal? He would just come back and said, it should be a golden car, you know. And then he would just explain. But his first thing was just show you there's no, you know, you can't scare me, you know, I'm not afraid of you, you know. And then he would come back and explain, you know, this is their, they're very happy and their spiritual master giving Krishna consciousness, you know. So they want to serve their spiritual master as good as the Supreme Personality of Godhead. You know, so for this reason they do that. Of course, Prabhupada wasn't attached to any of these things, and he could have said that, you know, if I don't care, I'll drive in a Volkswagen or something. But he didn't. So he would go after, because that disarms everyone when you do that. Then they become, they don't know what to do. You know, they don't know how to deal with you when you're so bold. So Prabhupada, he was always bold. So he's there, and he just kept saying, "You're such a malecha," you know. He said, you know, you do everything so nice. He said, do they do that in the temple kitchen? This was New Dwarka. New Dwarka was just like here, everything so wonderful. New Dwarka, that was the world headquarters at that time, 1973. So he said, do they do that in the temple kitchen? He said, do they throw eaten garbage into the trash can? He kept calling this garbage, you know. And I'm like, no, Prabhupada. Well, then why are you doing it, you know? So see, anything, as soon as there was a question answer, it was reason to yell at you more, you know. So then finally just walked away. So I was like, you know, you would just, that's all you could do was just wait it out, you know. Try, for me, it was just try to survive through it, you know. And then he was done, you know. Then you'd go in a few minutes later and it was like nothing happened. You know, he would just say something very nice to you, ask you something, tell you the dal was very tasty, or, you know, it was how he did things. So we're at the point. I'll be here for the next few days. I leave on the 29th morning. I'm looking forward to seeing everyone and speaking. But are there any questions or comments? Yes. Well, of course, I mean, we all get the opportunity. Initiation, very important process, and that's what Prabhupada said. It's important because that's how you learn humility. That's the spiritual master. His business is to teach you humility. The whole process of Krishna consciousness is to learn how to become humble. And that's, you know, that's what he said, you know, Prabhupada said. It was Sarabi who built Krishna Balaram Mandir. And everyone just saying how wonderful he had done. You know, Prabhupada just chastised him for the week before. Like he yelled at me that day. You can't imagine what Sarabi, every day Prabhupada would call him in and be screaming at him about different things because he wanted everything perfect. It was Vrindavan temple. It had to be, everything had to be perfect or it wouldn't be accepted there in Vrindavan. So he was on Sarabi so much about doing things. And actually it was a big long story too, but and Sarabi, he would just whatever Prabhupada said, he just accepted it and he would walk out. He wasn't even sleeping at night for the last week. You know, if he got an hour or two here or there because it was just this mad rush to finish in time. And on the morning walk, one day it was Tamal Krishna said, we were walking around the temple. It was beautiful, you know, and it was all done in brick covered with concrete, smooth concrete. And then there was a marble, powdered marble with different dyes. So like how it looks now isn't how it originally, it had these like light saffron pink and blue pastels all in different things. It was very, very beautiful and with this marble dust they had used. And we're walking around and Tamal is saying, so beautiful, Prabhupada, this temple is so beautifully, so Sarabi has done such a wonderful job, you know, service. And Prabhupada laughed, and Sarab was there. And Prabhupada laughed. He said, yes, everyone is telling me Sarab has done such a wonderful job. He said, but it is all I do is chastise him. He said, that's my duty, he said, as his spiritual master. And when he said that, I felt really happy because I felt so bad for Sarab because I was in the room all the time. Because I would call, you know, he'd say, where's Sarab? And I would get him and I would bring him. And then I would just sit there through it for some reason. I always did this. I always sat in a room when other people would come and get chastised. I think it was a relief because he wasn't yelling at you. You felt, made you feel good that someone else is getting chastised, you know. But like I felt so bad for Sharab, you know, because I knew he was just working like crazy, you know. And when Prabhupada said that, it just everything just came together, you know. And I understood, you know, many different things, but this was the process, you know, to just teach the disciple, to train the disciple, and to always try to bring him up to a different level. So you need someone to do that. Yeah, at least, of course, the spiritual master always goes as well. He leaves too. But he leaves behind his words, which he says he lives in his words. So Prabhupada left so many things. He said everything's there, all the answers are there. But there's a point in the beginning you have to, you know. He said, even a devotee said, where does Lord Chaitanya doesn't speak about, you know, accepting initiation? And Prabhupada quoted one of Shashastakam and said, Charanadapi Sunichena, to become humble. He said that means to take initiation. He said that's because that's it, we don't want to. Huh? And that's what you see going on now. It's I'll just take Prabhupada. I had a little discussion with someone recently in China. And I was saying, what makes you think Prabhupada wants you for a disciple? You know, does he have a choice? Or you just think because you want, you can take him as spiritual master? Why does he want, you know? Where's his choice as a person? You know, you're making a choice. But what is his choice? So this is a relationship. Everything's about relationships. Prabhupada made everything alive, just like bringing Radha Krishna here. He said Krishna's happy. Krishna's pleased. Krishna's a person, you know. He can be happy, he can not be pleased with what you do, but he said Krishna is pleased. So Prabhupada put everything had personality. He would do bead bags, you know, if he saw a bead bag hanging on a doorknob and he said, whose bead bag is crying on the doorknob? So that was very personal, you know, it gives a personality, crying. He saw prasadam, plate of prasadam, said the same, who has left their prasadam crying there on the table? Mm-hmm. Well, Prabhupada would say things, it made you think, which that's their business, is to make you think. That's the business of guru, to make you see things that we don't see. I guess it could be either. Life after life, but of course we've taken initiation in this life. Prabhupada never got into previous life kind of things. He was very conservative in talking about futures and pasts and things, and even about his, you know, whenever someone would say, who are you? I mean, Hari Sari, like he said, when he asked him, and Prabhupada said, if I told you, you wouldn't believe me, you know. And Prajumna asked him as well once, and Prabhupada said, if I told you, you would faint. So Prabhupada knew, huh? Otherwise he wouldn't have said, but his answers were always very interesting, how he answered things. So he didn't get into that. But our business, we're here now, is what we're dealing with is now. So it's what we want to is to serve life after life. That's, you know. He also, you know, but that means... too, that means different things, to serve the spiritual master life after life. You know, hopefully that'll mean in the spiritual world, you know, not that we're coming back here serving life after life. He said we should want to go back to the spiritual world. I walked into his room in Los Angeles, rang the bell, and that's what I said, being it was so nice. Yeah, this is, you know, like you say, nice opportunities. And offered obeisances. He was sitting behind his desk and he just looked at me and he said, we're not so advanced, he said, that we want to come back to the material world to do service life after life. He said, we should want to go back home, back to Godhead. So he said, Prabhupada would say we, sometimes it meant him, like he would say, we started this. But then sometimes when he said we, it meant you, you know, because certainly when he said we aren't so advanced, he was talking to me, he was letting me know I wasn't so advanced. And that I should want to go back home, back to Godhead. We should. That's why we come. Huh? That is our whole movement. It's what we say. It's our magazine. It's Prabhupada's magazine, Back to Godhead magazine. We have to have that goal. We want to go back home, back to Godhead. So even in service, life after life, we want to go back home, back to Godhead. We'll go back. Yes.
4 years back when you were here, you were telling about it. There was a flower in the second knee. So how Prabhupada was just telling you about the compassion. The flower was there on the desk, and there was the insect crawling under
the desk.
You want to tell it story?
Sure. That was also in New Dwarka. And it was. Prabhupada was just, to understand Prabhupada's compassion was very difficult. But he rang his bell. So I went in the room, and Prabhupada had white tile floor. It was like this, but just pure white floor. And very shiny, always waxed and clean, spotless. His room was spotless. So I offered obeisances, and I sat up, and he just went, "Do you see that?" And I didn't see anything. There's nothing. I'm alone in the room. And he keeps saying, "Do you see right there?" So I'm thinking, Prabhupada sees things, which we all knew Prabhupada could see things that we didn't see, spiritual personalities, like he saw Narada Muni, Rupa Goswami. So I didn't know. And he's going, "Right there." And I'm looking and I don't see any. And he said, "Right there." He said, "There's a bug next to you." So I finally looked, and it was small. So I saw there was a little black bug on the floor. And I said, "Yes, Prabhupada." And he said, "I've been watching that bug for a long time." He said, "And it hasn't moved." He was very serious. He says, "I think he's hungry." And I'm just going, "Yeah." He said, "Go into my bedroom." In his bedroom, he had little Jagannath deities, just like those on the altar, on a low table. They were dressed every day by one of the ladies. He said, "Go in the altar," he said, "and take Lord Jagannath's garland." He said, and "put the bug on the garland." He said, "and take it out to the garden." He said, "and put it under a tree in my garden." He said, "because it's hungry." So that's what I went. I put this little bug on the flower garland, and I carried it outside. I went into Prabhupada's garden and I put it in the shade, under the bushes. And then I went back to my room. And that was it. It was just, but this was Prabhupada. Like he had been watching, and it just bothered him, to see this little living entity. Prabhupada would say person. He would say, because everything has person, everything has soul, everything has personality. So he would, all living entities, he could say persons, he would call them persons. Yeah? Because that's what it means to see things equal vision, to see. So he had such compassion for all living entities. So he called me into the room. But then it was just like another, it wasn't something special. It was ordinary, but it was extraordinary, because who thinks like that? Who does these things? But he just, that's how he did things. So he had compassion for everyone, all living entities. Yes, Hare Krishna.
Thank you so much. I have a question about how you said that Srila Prabhupada was always, took you always on a level.
Tried to bring you higher, yeah.
Yes, and so it's always with spiritual master like this, but the path was always so much lower. Due to level of intelligence or weak senses, you not always can understand words of spiritual master, his instructions, what he's trying to tell you, because he's so much higher. What would your instruction, your advice would be to develop that capacity to understand what that your spiritual master wants is trying to tell you, and how to
Well, we follow as much as we understand. We follow the instructions, and it is as we see happen. Sometimes it can even the understanding it can increase as time goes by. So as much as we understand, we can follow. The method to do it is always there in the basic instructions. You chant our rounds, follow the regulative principles, and by rendering submissive devotional service, everything comes. Prabhupada say everything comes in time. So we just do. He said, if you don't understand, he said, you just do your service. And understanding will come. It can take a long time. I sat through so many lectures of Prabhupada, almost 1,000 lectures every morning, sitting right there. Prabhupada would speak, and I tried to be attentive and listen, but so much you don't understand. And Prabhupada, he would say it's 8, like now it's 8:44, he'd say in 30 seconds. He said, and no matter what you do, you can't get that back. Even with millions of dollars, even if you're so wealthy, you can't get that time back. It's gone. And, I was 21 years old, and I'd sit there and think, we're eternal. Because that instruction was also there, right? We're eternal. There's no birth, there's no death. And I would think, why is that such a bad thing? I didn't understand it, And I didn't understand it. And it was 1996. So how many years had gone by? 25 years had gone by. And I was writing my book. And every day I was working. I was a grahaspa, 3 children, I had a business. So I'd come home from work and I'd spend like an hour or two and I'd write one story. That's why my book came out the way it did. It's just one story after another, because it was done one day after another. It was like a diary. And I was remembering that instruction. And then I realized what it meant, that once it's gone, you can't ever get it back again. Because here I was writing about my time with Prabhupada, and you just think everything's eternal and nothing's going to change. And now he was gone. 20 years he had passed, he had left, he's gone. And whatever you did, you couldn't get that back again. He'd left. And I thought all the time I wasted, all that time I could have spent with him. So I understood. Understanding came, but it took 20 years to understand a very simple, what I thought was a simple statement, but very profound and had so much meaning in it. So that's there for all of us. Every second it goes by, you can't get it back. So if we waste it, it's gone. And we think, it's eternal, what's the difference? Well, we'll find out what the difference is, I told you I was here 4 years ago with my wife. Now she's gone. She had cancer and poof, gone. Just like that. And then you think, that's what happens, and you go, I should have done this and I should have done that. Then you have your regrets, This is what the process is. So we have to live our life trying to use our intelligence. And so at the time of death, there's no regretting, there's no hankering, there's no lamentation. You're prepared to leave. Everything's in place. That's what I got to learn so much in the last year with my wife, as Krishna just showed her. Prabhupada took her and showed her how to let go all these attachments. For a mother, letting go of her children, being able to say, Krishna's in control. I've done everything I can. That's very, you can say that, but to actually realize that and to move forward, things come in time. Krishna makes arrangements. The spiritual master makes the arrangements. So it'll happen. You just have to pray, be sincere, and do service. And everything else will happen. Prabhupada said, don't worry, everything will be okay. So you don't have to worry. You just have to do service. That's the process. I think we should stop here today. I'll be here for the next few days. And it's very nice again. I'm very happy to be here. And Maharaj, thank you. I know you're leaving soon. We're going to get breakfast together? Okay. So Srila Prabhupada ki jai. Hare Krishna. Thank you very much.